Hi, this is Pam Brown.
I'm Ann Diver Stamness, and this is Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. This week, our program continues our conversation on activism in later life.
Our guest this week is David Shear, a professor in the Theater Arts Department at HSU. David is an independent filmmaker who has scripted, produced, and directed a wide spectrum of films, some of which reflect activism, more recently about the environment and food sustainability. His newest film, titled Locally Grown, America's Food Revolution, was produced in collaboration with another local activist, Suzanne Simpson. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you.
Your medium to take on social and environmental issues has been film. How did you get involved in what we would call activism through film?
I've always been involved and engaged in social issues and looking for those things that matter. I was originally a writer and thought that I would, you know, take that adage, the pen's mightier than the sword, literally, and put that to the test. But when I got into graduate school, I got an MFA in screenwriting. I decided to move toward film, thinking, well, I can actually reach more people likely through the medium of film than I can through print. And discovered actually in that process that I'm more talented visually than I am verbally. And so I got into directing and producing, and it kind of went from there. And I realized that film is a way to tell stories, but in those stories, every good story has some nugget of truth or meaning or purpose, and if it's a good story. And so for me, it was about just understanding that I took Horace's advice, the old philosopher, that if you want to educate somebody, you must first entertain them. So couching my message in a candy coating of shiny objects and fun things to look at is a way to reach people. And this has been a dialogue I've had over the years. I had a colleague years ago who kind of picked on me for wanting to have my films go to broader audiences through PBS or the Discovery Channel and that kind of thing. This was a colleague who was much more interested in experimental film and art and personal messaging, and kind of berated the fact that I was a sellout, I was commercial. Made me think about this a little bit because I realized, wait a minute, the first night that my Discovery Channel film aired, they track these things, and I was able to find out that, you know, nearly 9 million people watched that movie that night. Well, I can reach 9 million people at a swath, whereas this other person who's doing experimental films might reach 90. And I realized that this is really a vehicle for social change. If you really want to bring people into awareness and understanding of a topic, that film's just an excellent way to get there. I'm a storyteller first, so I always want to tell the story. I want to know what the stories are. The film just became kind of a natural extension of that, of the writing to moving from words into image. And so if the pen's mightier than the sword, then the screen or the image is mightier than the pen.
What's your decision-making process when you decide to take on a new film?
One of the things I love about documentary film in particular, I mean, I still do fiction work as well and commercial work and so on, but documentary is kind of how I've gotten branded over the last 20 years, and that's really where most of my social change or activist strokes have come from, that arena. I love documentary because I get to get totally immersed in a topic. I mean, this is like a research paper, so to speak. I'm a lifelong learner. I'm a true believer in liberal arts education and knowing everything I can about something. And if I'm going to be taking on an authoritative voice of a landscape like Yellowstone National Park or a topic like food politics, I immerse myself in the dialogue. I do the research. I try to find out everything I can about it and all the points of view in the spectrum from the pros and the cons, so to speak, or the liberals and the conservatives, or however you want to create the dichotomy of whatever issue it is. What are the issues and what are the parameters of the topic? And then I try to understand them well enough that I can then try to put them back into a structure. One of the things I'll teach my students, so how do I tell us the story of Yellowstone National Park, for example? Yellowstone's the protagonist. It's the hero of the story. Well, it's, you know, to not anthropomorphize a place, but you kind of have to, because if it's the hero, there has to be, to make it dramatic and interesting, I have to understand what the conflict is, which is what are the opposing forces? What are the things at work that prevent this from being a hero or heroic or whatever, reaching its objectives? Because all stories are about a hero wanting to reach a goal. And the goal becomes the climax of the story, so to speak. That's the resolution of their problem. They have a problem that needs to get solved. That's kind of the simple explanation of all story structure. So what's the problem of Yellowstone? So I immerse myself into the topic. I decide before I begin what the climax is going to be. What's the final bottom line of the story? Sometimes it presents itself in the process of making the film. But mostly I try to get it done beforehand. I try to script my documentaries, which is really unusual. I have like 20 banker boxes of research on the Yellowstone film. That was my first major film back in 96, 97. I look at all the photographic evidence. I look at all the films that have been made. I speak with all the people. I learn all the points of view and that kind of thing. And so ultimately for me, a decision-making process is one of evolving and being open to what I discover. It's a process of discovery. That's the point of documentary film. Every producer has 10 or 15 irons in the fire. And the one that gets hot is the one that gets made. And what by hot, what I mean is that's the one that gets funded. And so I'll direct my attentions to that one then, because any one of those are stories that I would like to tell. I have a file cabinet full of stories I'd like to tell that I'll never get to.
How has your activism changed over the course of your life?
I think I have more passion now about things, just in terms of really understanding how important this messaging of activism can be. And I now know that I actually, through making films, I actually wield the power to create change. Again, this is something that I see in my young students, these 20-somethings. They don't realize the power of this medium, and even though it's so pervasive. They come to realize it when they hear people laughing at a joke that is in their movie and it's on the screen. They start to kind of get inklings of it. But now I not only have a sense of a mastery of the medium to a degree, I'll never master it, but I'm better than I was 20 years ago. But I also have an understanding that I can tell these messages and be blunt and direct. I mean, time is of the essence. As I age, I realize I don't have as many days on my calendar as I did when I was 20. And so I'm a little more passionate about it in terms of not waiting around and hoping things come together. I'm more involved in bringing about the change.
And I think that increase in passion is the perfect note on which to end the interview. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Annie is our editor and engineer.
Tune in next Thursday to Chronologically Gifted, Conversations on Life After 50. For more information, past shows, and the links to our podcasts, email, and Facebook group, go to our website at chronologicallygifted.org.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Annie. Thanks so much for listening.
We'll be here next week, and we hope you will be too.